Welcome back to the Pregnancy Help Podcast. I'm Christine Grimmond, and this is part two of our two-part series on what you should know about chemical abortion. If you're listening to this episode first, I would strongly encourage you to go back to last week's episode and listen to part one, since that provides such a strong background to what we'll be addressing today. One thing we regularly like to mention on this podcast, especially when talking about chemical abortion, is the Abortion Pill Rescue Network. Women very often regret taking the abortion pill and are looking for a way to save their unborn baby, and the Abortion Pill Rescue Network stands ready 24/7 to answer that call and assist her. If you'd like to learn more, visit aprnworldwide.com. I'm here with Jarell Godsey, president of Heartbeat International, and Carol Novielli, contributor for Live Action News and research fellow for Live Action, as we discuss some of the little-known history and agenda behind chemical abortion. And there's a lot more to get into in this episode, so let's get started.
Well, thank you, Carol, for joining us. You kind of walked through some history with us. You took us back to the historical components that lead us into having abortion pill in the United States, how it comes to us through some very shady historical points. And you kind of brought us to the current time frame where we've seen, of course, the abortion pill gets approved in the Clinton administration, and now it begins to take hold. We basically talked right up until kind of this current time frame, right before COVID, where we begin to see. Now, this is where Heartbeat International suddenly dials in. Not that we weren't aware that it was going on, but we became really much more educated on all of this when Abortion Pill Rescue Network comes to us, which is the conversation that was in 2017, actually solidifies in 2018. And I remember then the Guttmacher Institute published the fact that there was this arc of the growing use of the chemical abortion and what that then portended for the pregnancy help movement. You know, as that concept of an abortion pill versus a surgical abortion, because we had always kind of walked in that understanding that she had to go somewhere to get her abortion. And suddenly that was changing. We had telehealth was kind of out there. There were states trying to box it out. There were other states embracing it. But the idea that abortion could be delivered apart from a brick and mortar location was suddenly becoming a big thing. And of course, we know the profit margins on abortion pill are greater than that of a surgical abortion, which then it became clear to us that the industry itself was changing, changing the paradigm of their business model really towards this. And we've continued to see the growth of that. And this is all before we get to kind of the COVID. COVID changes the equation for FDA. It changes some of the equations. I know you were talking to us about REMS. Let's kind of set the stage. But we also saw, we've seen some powerful entities that have become aligned with abortion, things that frankly are surprising. We were not too long ago in the midst of a lawsuit with the state of North Dakota, because they actually had they had passed a law. This is again a few years ago. They passed a law where they were adding to the informed consent and they wanted to include abortion pill reversal. Well, that was our interest, so we joined that lawsuit, only to find that the entity suing the state of North Dakota about informed consent was none other than the American Medical Association. And they are a player on all of this, as well as those that ACOG, so the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, are powerful players in line with the abortion interests. Tell us more about that.
Right. So just a little backstory before I get to that. One of the reasons that you start seeing this really push for the, you know, chemical abortion is that there was a shortage of abortion providers in the 90s. There was a lot of stigma around committing abortion. It wasn't something that the general public, they tolerated it as a sort of necessary evil, but the mentality wasn't very positive towards abortion. And I think as you saw more social media, more things like that, but what really came on the stage at that time was Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett had been around for quite a number of years. In fact, I don't know if your listeners know this, but Warren Buffett was involved in the pre-Planned Parenthood Los Angeles clinic, where he got involved in, he created, prior to Roe, he created a church, he and his partner, that could refer women for illegal abortions. And then when abortion, was legalized, that entity became Planned Parenthood of Los Angeles. So it's like all of these players like that are behind the scenes. And so he starts funding all of this effort to get these abortions, to get more people trained through the University of California, through their system. And it's pretty much, you know, pretty much anywhere you go, if you look at what Buffett's doing, you can kind of see where the abortion industry is moving. And so his money obviously is tied up in a lot of these same, you know, organizations that are giving such a hard time to abortion pill reversal. They're not in favor of choice. They will take you out. Anything that competes with abortion, because why do we need abortion? As we talked about before, it's a very eugenic, it is tethered to eugenics. It is in their mind necessary for the limiting of population growth. And so they will take you out if you oppose them. And so we have in 2016, this change that takes place under the Obama FDA, where they allow for the abortion pill to be further in gestation. And they suddenly are removing this like requirement that you report complications, only deaths, just no complications. And then what we also find out later is in 2016 also is that you no longer have to take the pill in front of a clinician. And so you're starting to see where women are now are starting to be able to take the pill home in the quote comfort of their own home as it was pitched. And you start to see the marketing for the abortion pill begin to really change towards like, this is something that would be more comfortable for you and things like that. And yes, the American Medical Association. Now, a lot of these organizations like AMA, believe it or not, they used to have an anti-abortion platform. They were pretty much against abortion until like 1967, I think. And a lot of the language we see that comes in through a lot of these organizations comes in through an organization called the American Law Institute. And the American Law Institute is a think tank pretty much of like very, it's there's not public who's on there, but they put out this model penal language. And so I studied this all the way back in history of all of the ways that this language of abortion for rape, incest, life of the mother, health of the baby was being promoted way before the Roe versus Wade decision. So when Harry Blackmun wrote Roe, he looked to three pillars of society, the medical association, the legal association, and sorry to say, the church. The church, by and large, not the Catholic church, but a lot of Protestant churches had already incorporated this language, thinking that this was a very, very, very small number of abortions that would be necessary, abortions for rape, incest, life of the mother, right? And so they were saying, okay, this is the compassionate way to go. And so we see this is what's happening at the AMA in 1967. They adopt this language that, you know, that they're against abortion, except when there's, quote, documented medical evidence of a threat to the health and life of the mother, that the child, quote, may be born with an incapacitating physical deformity or mental deficiency, or where the pregnancy is resulting from legally established statutory rape, forcible rape, incest. So they have these like carve outs, which are the model penal code of the American Law Institute. This is a really quick, fast note. Alan Guttmacher's twin brother Mansfield sat on that model penal code. They're just like everywhere. It's so incestuous, these people, I'm telling you right now. And so even today we see that the American Medical Association is staunchly pro-abortion. So they switch gears. Now, one of the things that I found was really interesting to me, having done the research on eugenics in the past, and I put everything on a timeline, you start seeing the shift in the medical board, you know, groups right around the same time as the civil rights movement is starting. And there's reasons for that. So we used to have a separate Black Medical Board Association. We had the American Medical Board Association. Suddenly the American Medical Board Association is wanting to shake hands with the Black Medical Association, bringing them in. And what is the first thing that gets rolled out? Abortion, right? Same thing happened with Planned Parenthood. A lot of people don't know this. When Planned Parenthood decided to announce they were going to start committing abortions, they suddenly hire they bring on their first Black board member and put him out front to announce that they're going to start committing abortions. So there, you know, if you look back in history and you see where things are coming from, it gives you a better perspective of kind of, you know, it might look like everybody's just playing nice and we're all just like trying not to be racist anymore. But really what we're doing is we're doing the Margaret Sanger, you know, strategy. I call it the Negro Project strategy, which is utilizing the communities that are being targeted to push the very thing that will hurt them and kill them. And so that's what's kind of happening.
Use
here.
That phrase, because that's what they use. Like that's the term that they put together in order to try to influence the Black community in particular. Yeah. I know they enlisted pastors and whatnot. So that you're not assigning
that's
that
not
term.
A derogatory, right?
No, you're making that reference because
That's
that's the
what it was
reference they
called.
made.
That was what Margaret Sanger called it. She called it the Negro Project, and you can still find it in the records of Planned Parenthood at the libraries that they're kept at under that name. And so the AMA has been saturated with abortion. I was just like on their Twitter page just recently, and they're still pushing abortion. They came out with a very harsh statement when the Dobbs decision came out. And what you have to remember is a lot of times the members are not in the same mentality as the organization itself. But the now ACOG, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists.
Before you leave that's a great point. It's not that the members have that, but it's that those that are controlling the organization at the top are now, and this goes to kind of your incestuous, relationships amongst these, this elite that are making these decisions. So the organization is making these decisions. And I remember reading that back from the 50s. They had a powerful president in the 50s who was very anti-abortion, and then they basically undid all of that, like you said, in the 60s, which of course is when abortion begins to take root. We have 67, we get to all of that. But as we move into this, then also the other thing I was going to say with ACOG, I know that there's a similar history as well. The founder of Heartbeat International, Dr. Hillebrand, one of the three founders of Dr. Hillebrand, who was an OB gynecologist in the Toledo area, was actually on the, as I understand, was on the was a board member or somehow in that higher up echelon of leadership with ACOG in particular. And then when they made this move to support abortion, he in good conscience could not stay in that role and resigned from that position, stepped away. As they made a move more towards supporting abortion, he of course could not, and then moved out of that. So there's this always this kind of connection for us in our history of Heartbeat of when it kind of like the divide amongst the medical community. Because honestly, Carol, the early part of the pregnancy help movement was our Catholic physicians, our Catholic nurses in particular, who were utterly convicted on this matter and who were often the first ones to encounter a woman in that situation that she didn't know what to do. And suddenly she was now able to, and in some states, in some ways, able to consider abortion even legally, in this time frame. And they were at that kind of our first pregnancy help folks as far as in that season. So we're always we talk a lot about how we became medical, but the truth is we started medical as a movement, as a pregnancy help movement. And then we get there, and unfortunately, as Heartbeat gets landed in 71, we now have, of course, Roe in 73. But it's these agencies that are now really paving the way for Roe to really become part of the medical community.
Yeah, and what's interesting is we did a whole series of videos and studies, and I've written quite a bit about this, the whole feminist or second wave feminism, where you have a whole lot of that same influence, where you had the National Organization for Women, which never mentioned abortion, and then suddenly they're like passing abortion resolutions. And of course we find out later two men, Larry Leder and Bernard Nathanson, who later became pro-life, were influential in making those decisions. And in the middle of all this chaos of these abortion resolutions flying around, instead of like maternal health for women, stopping pregnancy discrimination, all these other things, these Catholic, some of them were Catholic, some of them weren't, just were horrified. And they walk out, and then some of them are very instrumental in getting women great, amazing rights in the workplace. Their names are not well known, but some of these people were very pro-life. And they're involved, and they go out and start Feminists for Life because they're so horrified at this second wave feminist push for abortion. And all of this is just, collapsing on the country in this time of chaos and upheaval during the civil rights movement, during Vietnam War, during all of these things that are happening in our country, which is, kind of how the enemy works and comes in. And people are talking about freedom, and they're talking about rights, and suddenly they just glum onto this whole thing, idea of rights and freedom. And one of the things that they've always like recognized is that, location and ease of access, it's what the majority of what they learned even previous to Roe was the reason that you even had a lot of minorities taking part in abortion. Once you have centers everywhere in the country where we had like brick and mortars, you started seeing Black women and the targeted communities start taking part in abortion. The same thing with the you know, how the ease of abortion pills are always now. What do you hear mostly them talking about? Maternal health for Black women, maternal health for Black women. We got to give them abortions, right? That's always their go-to. It's never to improve the maternal health of the, of this population. It's to take their children out. And so.
Exactly. That's a powerful point that gets glossed over too readily. I know in the wake of Dobbs, I'm talking about literally like in the months right after Dobbs, we began to hear more about the mortality rate. What was so interesting in that scenario and kind of shows you how they're really doing it kind of in a way that's more propaganda is they're suddenly very concerned about mortality rates. But the research that they're actually citing was before Dobbs, when like not even the Texas heartbeat law had taken effect, and when they're suddenly concerned about these mortality rates, but the very mortality rates they're talking about were in 2021 and 2020, which predates really any of the changes in the abortion law. So yeah, I see how like everything.
426 deaths that the CDC has reported since 1973. These are ones that they've actually investigated. Abortion, legal abortion deaths. They ask any of these people if they know one name. Ask if they know Holly right. Patterson. They don't. They don't care. It's just everything I'm looking at now. It's the same playbook pre-Roe, right? Women are dying. That numbers of women dying, hundreds of thousands that they rolled out was so overinflated that even yep. The Washington Post has given it multiple Pinocchios. Even to Planned Parenthood's former president, you know, a couple of years ago, gave multiple Pinocchios. And we've documented this at Live Action News multiple times. And so the playbooks and the ways that they go about this are, they know it works because it creates this fear. And then they're able to just, you know, work on everyone's fear. And so, yeah,
they're using that right now. Like we've seen Amber Thurman, we've seen these stories that are coming out about women that have been received improper medical care after taking an abortion. Maybe they didn't receive any care at all because they were able to access the abortion pill outside of healthcare. And then suddenly the wrongdoer is somehow the abortion ban, right? The one in Georgia or where else. Like this is, you said it exactly right. They're using the same playbook that they've used before. They're shielding the abortion pill and its effects. They've done this against APR as well. I could talk about that a lot. Maybe we'll get into that in a few minutes, the whole Crinan study. But they've been doing this, and it's the complicit media that is doing it with them. Like it's we don't have good journalists anymore, like you, Carol. We don't have those that are advocating for what's best for women. We have those that are simply advocating for this ideology, even ignoring completely ignoring things that they should otherwise be open and honest about. So let people make those decisions with more knowledge. But sorry, I couldn't help but go there.
No, and I think, I mean, we'll just keep going because use this how you will. But in the Amber Thurman case, nobody's asking like who prescribed this drug and why did she end up in an ER several days later? Did she know there's a black box warning on the label of the abortion pill for sepsis? Was that nailed down? So you know what we did at Live Action News? I asked my intern, go through all of the Google reviews you could find in North Carolina. And we came up with horror stories of women who are reporting that abortion facilities where they are getting abortion pills in North Carolina are leaving them without care. And even though the REMS requires that these prescribers have the ability to handle a complication or refer to someone who can, they're not saying refer them to the emergency room carte blanche. But when they refer them to when they tell them, just go home and go to the emergency room. And even some of the women in these reviews are saying, I called the facility. And they're like, no, no big deal. You're fine. You're fine. It's just blood, a little blood. No, they go to the emergency room and find out that they have an incomplete abortion, which is exactly what happened in the Amber Thurman situation where you have retained products of conception. You are likely, if you don't, you know, get a surgical abortion or get the parts removed, you know, you could have sepsis. You could go into a sepsis. When you look at Candy Miller, the other woman from Georgia, I actually got the autopsy for that. She was literally taking three different drugs. You know, she was taking Tylenol. She was taking fentanyl. I'm trying to remember what the third one was off the top of my head. That was in her system. That was in the toxicology report of her autopsy. And the interesting thing is hers came from Aid Access, which for your listeners is a online abortion pill dispensary out of, you know, in another country here. But they do now prescribe in the United States. So probably likely came from a U.S. subscriber or prescriber. But her pills came from Aid Access. And if you went to Aid Access's, and I document this in my article, if you go and look at where Aid Access was in 22 and what they were telling women, it's like, it's no big deal if you're bleeding a little extra or whatever. So they're offloading all of these people. This is not healthcare people. They're offloading the women to our emergency rooms. They're literally telling them, just go to the emergency room. They're just offloading them there. There's no responsibility. And like you said, it is a boondoggle for the abortion industry. All they have to do now is they just need a building. They don't even need a clinic. They just need some cloud in the sky. They need maybe a pencil, a computer, maybe a telephone. And they can open up as either a virtual abortion dispensary or even a brick and mortar abortion dispensary. And now, you know who holds the weight? The woman. The woman has to play doctor. She has to play nurse and she has to play pathologist. She has to know if she's bleeding too much. She has to know if she's showing signs of sepsis. She has to know when to start asking for emergency care because she's not encouraged to do any follow-up with the prescriber. That might cost money. And now she has to tell if the retained fetal products are fully, if she's fully expelled the full baby so that she knows that she doesn't have any retained tissue inside of her and might risk sepsis. It really makes me angry. I'm sorry.
Yeah, two things. It should make us all angry. You forgot one thing that the abortion industry also needs is the armored car to carry all the money that they're making from abandoning these women. And then the second thing is we've also had many, many reports, and I mean many reports of where women are being told, if you go to the ER, do not tell them that you take. So like you're actively telling a woman to deny a medical professional the information that they may need to properly treat you. That is nowhere near healthcare, right?
That's not healthcare.
We know abortion is not healthcare, but even that directive is anti-healthcare because you're telling them to lie and to obscure something that may be an exceptionally important fact for that unsuspecting, unwitting healthcare professional to now help you. That's amazing. We've heard many examples of that.
It protects the abortion. They say, oh, we want to protect women because post-ops, we have these laws. There's no law on the books in any state that would prosecute the woman ever. And so they're telling them, go to the emergency room and tell them, you know, and just present as having a natural miscarriage. And then you have Daniel Grossman, who's conducting clinical trial, multiple different clinical trials, literally telling ER doctors, don't document these as abortions. Well, who does that benefit, right?
That's right. We
have, and then if you go to the ER and you die, that's not going to get recorded as number one. It won't get recorded at all as an abortion pill death. And number two, it's not going up the chain to Danco. Danco doesn't know about it. Therefore, Danco doesn't have to report it to the FDA. Guess what? Guess who is going to suffer? I'm going to tell you right now. Miscarriage care is going to start looking. Women who are wanting to get pregnant, when they go and get their health insurance, you watch as that starts to go up in large amounts because early pregnancy is going to start looking so dangerous because these abortionists are sending women to the ERs, telling these women to lie, instructing them to do this. In fact, I'll tell you this. The FDA is also in cahoots with this because you know why? I started watching the FDA. Their latest label does not tell women to take, does not tell, suggest that the woman is advised to take the medication guide with her to the emergency room. That little bit of like text is now off the label. Why do you think that is? Because they always co-sign for the abortion industry. Always. They always have. They always will. Under the influence of ACOG and these others, they are co-signing for the abortion industry, removing that information. Now she's not thinking, oh, I need to take this thing, show that I have mifepristone. No, just tell me you're having a natural miscarriage. Now when the cost of early pregnancy goes sky high on your insurance, is it really because in the United States there's all of this risk in early pregnancy, or are we really talking about women who took the abortion pill and said they were having a natural miscarriage? It's really shameful the way that they're doing this, and it's definitely not healthcare. And yes, they're making tons of money. One of the virtual dispensaries was quoted in Ms. Magazine. Ms. Magazine did a whole series. Carrie Baker, the journalist there, did a whole series with these virtual sites after the mail order was approved by the Biden administration. She says, she basically talks about the amount of money. She says, we spend less than 5 minutes or one of the virtuals says, we spend less than 5 minutes with the woman. We do little to no follow-up care. And they're making so much money that they're literally now donating some of it to the brick and mortar, because after all, you need some brick and mortars in place to handle the complications, which now they don't need, because now they're going to send them to the ER. I mean, let me tell you, it's mind-boggling if anybody thinks that this is healthcare in any way, shape, or form. Anyone that will kill a child is not concerned about your health as a woman. Women, listen, I know if you're listening, please understand these people, they will take your money to kill your baby. Think about those are the people that you're putting your life in. So
you mentioned a particular character in all of this that's much more of a common name that we see now. And there are there's a couple of them. You mentioned Grossman, right? Daniel Grossman. His is a name that kind of pops up in research. His is a name that kind of pops up as an expert whenever we're talking about the issue of abortion. But there's more to know about Daniel Grossman and his buddy Mitch Krynan, as far as who they are in the abortion world and kind of how they play the system, use the system to get their messaging across.
Yeah, so Dr. Daniel Grossman wants everybody to know this fact about him. He is an abortionist, and he makes that very clear. It's one of the pinned, Twitter X posts that he has, making sure everybody knows he's an abortionist. He is the principal investigator in, pharmacy clinical trial. He has done sponsoring and been, not sponsored, but he's been principal investigator in other clinical trials. And he's working right now to get the abortion pill approved over the counter. His ties, okay, so he literally, as recently as 2020, I was able to document that he worked for an organization, or he is a senior advisor at Ibis Reproductive Health, okay? Ibis Reproductive Health, as recently as 2020, was receiving direct funding from guess who? Said on their website, funding and support from Danco. Who is Danco? The abortion pill in charge of U.S. manufacturing in the United States, Danco Laboratories, and the Packard Foundation, right? So this is a person doing clinical trial who's literally a senior advisor on a group. For years, this was happening. Now, maybe it still happens, but they have removed it. Every time we go out there and sort of expose these things, you got to put everything in archive because they will pull it down fast. And I've got screen grabs if you want to see it. He's also a former National Abortion Federation board member. He was on the board of the NARO Pro-Choice America, as it was called at that time, for many years. And he, I think he was also on the board of Whole Women's Health. He served as a consultant to Planned Parenthood and the Center for Reproductive Rights. I feel like I'm doing his whole CV here, but he was like, he has all of this interaction, like basically all he thinks of 24/7, is abortion. And he's been really instrumental, as a lot of these men, I always say men, because if you look at the history of the push of pills, birth control, hormone, all of it on women, it's always so far been coming from the influence of these men. And so he's been pushing for advanced provision of the abortion pill, which is like, just put out your hand, little girls. What is it, Halloween today, that we're recording on Halloween? So it's like candy in the candy shop, just however many pills you want. So they're going to do studies to prove that, we can just pass out boatloads of medication and over the counter. That's where they want the REMS lifted. They want it to go over the counter. And he works under the University of California system, which is, who is that funded by? Heavily funded by Warren Buffett, one of the investors.
Same players that we were talking about before. So this is one of the, this is one of the names that anytime we see it, any kind of article or research that comes, whenever you see the name Grossman, those are the exact connections. The one you just laid out for us really are what we need to make in our mind, that this is one of the preeminent individuals of the abortion industry. And so when we're encouraged to trust the experts, yes, he's definitely an expert, but he's mostly an expert at selling abortions and selling the concept and the ideology. And naturally his, he will influence that research to achieve his ends, right? Because they do have goals. Like, there is an agenda behind this. And so when they're putting out research, this is not an accurate understanding to say that this is the type of research that is completely unbiased, because it's not. It's completely biased. And so we see his name. We also see another character, and there are many, but for our limited time that we have remaining. So another character that we see that we've tangled with a little bit is Mitch Krinen. Now, he's another one of these players that pops up. And for us, he actually pops up in a big way as far as abortion pill reversal. But he's also in similar league with Grossman as far as so he's done studies and whatnot relative to abortion, but he has an abortion industry connection as well.
Oh yeah, so when they do, if they're at all following the rules, when they do publish studies, they are supposed to give us, you know, any ideas of their conflicts of interest. And over and over and over again, and Krinen has repeatedly said this in multiple different studies that he has authored or been a co-author on, where he has been, you know, talked about having, and I call them conflicts of interest, obviously, where he's on the payroll of Danco, the abortion pill manufacturer. He, quote, receives compensation from Danco as a, quote, consultant. He receives consulting fees or an honorarium from Danco, or is he a third-party telephone consultant for Danco? And then you have these people that are literally sitting on the journalists, like the Journal Contraception. He's on editorial board of Contraception, the journal, which is the official journal of the Society of Family Planning, which was founded with a, quote, generous gift from the Packard Foundation and receives millions from the Buffett Foundation. I mean, listen, what I like to say is that when you're looking at clinical trial of the abortion pill, just understand that the same people who invested in the drug, and by the way, there was some kickback there with Population Council and others. I don't know who else is getting kickback, but when it first started, there was some residual. But you have to understand that if it's not that the author themselves is getting a direct kickback or some sort of honorarium or has some payroll ties to Danco, you can look next to see, well, where was that clinical trial? What location was it? Was it Planned Parenthood, University of California? Same players, same funders going on there. Oh, well, let's now look at the where the study is being published. In a lot of cases, those publications are also getting funding from those same organizations. And all you have to do is think back to the tobacco, not even going far as back as tobacco. Look at even the whole opioid crisis, you know, where doctors are just scripting all of these drugs, right? And New York Times has had a huge expose where they just put all these like names of all these like players on these drugs. And this went on for years. And then, you know, during the tobacco hearings and R.J. Reynolds and all these, what did they do? They put these men in white coats out there to say, oh, yeah, smoking tobacco, smoking cigarettes is healthy and it's not going to hurt your health and it's good and it's great for you. I mean, listen, America, don't buy it. Now, it's there's nothing unethical about, you know, any drug company doing its own research, but they need to disclose it. What's really unethical here, in my view, is the journalism. The lack of exposing this, the lack of talking about the conflicts of interest over and over and over. They will quote these people and they will say, oh, he's an obstetrician gynecologist at this university or with this hospital. They won't tell you that they're an abortionist. They won't tell you that they're getting money from Danco directly. And Mitch Krinen is not the only one. There's multiple authors of multiple studies. I'm not saying it's every study, but there's multiple ones that have disclosed either getting money from Danco or GenBio Pro. And then, like I said, go look at the clinical trial where it was, where the study site was. Go look at who funded the study. Go look at who, you know, where the periodical where it was published. And you usually will find the same players paying the money to make sure that this always says that it's safe. No matter how many women are lost to follow-up, which we see over and over and over again, right? It's always safe. That's the always the bottom line is they say it's safe. So,
well, I would say that as far as for our listeners, what they should be sure to go and look at is Carol Novielli's writing at Live Action to make sure that you're on, that they're getting your writing, because you do us a great service. And I want to thank you for your time with us today. There's more we could do. I have to kind of stop it now because I think we'll jump into another subject and more aspects of this, because there are so many entanglements. And Carol, you've done such a wonderful job for us as far as exposing this. I want to encourage our our listeners to go to Live Action's news things. Just Google Carol Novielli and abortion and you'll get a ton of stuff, but stay in tune with what she's doing. She grabs a hold of things. She's been so good to us as far as letting us know about things that are kind of unfolding and her investigative work. We've been grateful for her work at Pregnancy Help News, but just thankful that she's been at this. And I know you've been at this quite some time. You mentioned, picketing outside in episode one. You mentioned picketing outside of the French consulate in South Florida. We found out not too long ago that we kind of were in the same vicinity growing up in South Florida. And it's I'm grateful that there was this kind of parallel person, and many of them actually, who have been fighting the good fight for so many years. And you do us a great service, Carol. We are grateful. And just any last thoughts before we close out today?
Well, Live Action and Lila, send their regards to all the pregnancy help centers. Thank you for all you're doing, and keep fighting forward, because as you said before, women are changing their mind. We've never seen the quick turnaround from women as we're seeing now. They get the pill and within minutes they're Googling how to reverse this abortion. So just want to say keep fighting the fight, and thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's been a lovely time and it's gone by very, very quickly. So I really appreciate being here.
Yeah. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Carol and Jarrell. Lots and lots of information packed into these two episodes. So I strongly encourage our listeners to go back and listen to part one. If you haven't listened to that one already, maybe listen to both of these a couple of times and take some notes, because there's a lot there. Again, subscribe to the Pregnancy Help podcast, because we are always bringing updates on things like chemical abortion and other topics affecting pregnancy help. So stay tuned. And with that, thank you for listening to this episode of the Pregnancy Help podcast.